let's jump in here to former and future President Trump holding a newser while Kamala hides. He's doing this live in New York City at Trump Tower.
Immigrant invasion has brought massive crime into our country at levels that nobody's ever seen before. We've never seen levels like this. And during the debate, I mentioned that, and David Muir, a real lightweight, whose ratings have gone way down, by the way, because he lost credibility. I had one against three, but I think we did great. But David Muir of ABC, fake news, when I said that crime is way up in our country, he corrected me. He corrected me on so much, and it was right what I said. He didn't correct her one time, and what she said was wrong. Absolutely wrong. So many different. Charlottesville, she was wrong. All of the different things, almost everything she said, and she was never corrected. But he corrected me in crime. He said, no, no, crime has not gone up. I said, crime has gone up massively. He said, I'd like to state for the record that crime has not gone up. Now, you don't know this, but we had a deal with ABC that there will be no corrections of any kind. And they violated the deal. Why? Because they're bad people and they're fake news. So he did it many times to me during the debate. He violated the deal. That's the deal. Because you can take anything and try and make up stories with it. We had a deal where that wouldn't happen. You could do whatever you wanted as soon as the debate was over. But he did it in total violation of what our agreement was. And a lot of people standing right over there will tell you exactly what it was. We'll show you what it was. David Muir has lost all credibility. The other person, I never heard of her. I never want to hear of her. She was terrible. I don't know how she ever got her job in the first place. But we have a country to save, and we can't have fake news like that. And his ratings deserve to go down. Here in New York City, an estimated 75% of arrests in Midtown Manhattan and over 60% of arrests in Queens are now illegal aliens. They've given you the fake stories that the illegals coming into the country are much better than our people. They don't commit crimes. These are some of the worst criminals anywhere in the world. And they don't just come from South America. They come from all over the world. The Congo in Africa, a lot of them coming from the Congo. The Middle East, Asia. They do come from South America, but not all. They're coming from all over the world, and they're emptying out their jails, and they're emptying out their mental institutions. The money they're saving is beyond belief, and what they're doing to our country. And if I were the president of one of those countries, I'd be doing the same thing. I'd say, let's empty out our jails into the United States. We're dumping ground for the rest of the world, and it's going to stop starting on January 20th. But the most important day in the history of our country is going to be November 5th, Election Day. 3 months ago in Queens, an illegal alien released into our country by Border Czar Harris approached two 13-year-old children with a machete in broad daylight, forced them into the woods, tied them together by the wrists, and raped the young girl, hurt the girls very, very badly. They caught him because he put it on tape. He put it on film. They caught him. He thought it would be nice to have it on tape to show his friends. In June, two NYPD officers were shot at point-blank range by an illegal migrant from Venezuela. By the way, the crime rate in Venezuela is down to the lowest level it's ever been that they know of because they've taken their street gangs. They've taken their criminals off the streets. They've taken their drug dealers, and they've emptied their jails almost. They'll be emptied very soon, within the next 2 months. I guess they can't get enough buses. But they're bringing people at record levels to our country. These are criminals, and their crime rate is the lowest it's been ever that anybody can remember. It's become, Caracas has become a safe and wonderful city, unlike our cities that are getting worse and worse with this horrible invasion that Kamala, in particular, because I'm no fan of Biden. He's been a terrible president, doesn't know what he's doing, and he proved that during the debate. But you know what? He assigned her the job, and whether you call her a border czar or just say that she was put in charge of the border, doesn't make any difference. Same thing. She's done a horrible job, and she'll be out there tomorrow standing probably in front of the wall that I built, trying to say what a wonderful job she did, and the fake news will believe her because that's what they want to do. But she didn't, and I hope everybody out there understands that. The Border Patrol custody was incredible, and I have to say that Border Patrol has done an amazing job under the circumstances. And you heard Tom Homan many times say there was never anywhere near anybody as good as President Trump when it came to all of the things that we're talking about, the border, crime on the border. And he said there wasn't anybody even close as president. In Albany last May, an illegal alien who was caught and released by Kamala Harris stalked and raped a 15-year-old girl, driving up behind her, abducting her by force with a metal pipe, and raping her again and again, over and over, and hurting her very badly. In Indiana this June, a woman was kidnapped by two illegal aliens, brought to a house, held down and raped, and then forced into the back of a car while illegals drove around talking about how to kill her. Let's find out how to kill her. She threw herself out of the moving vehicle, was badly hurt, but escaped. And she said, "They didn't mean to rape me. They meant to kill me." That was her statement. Earlier this year, an illegal migrant from Haiti granted entry by Kamala and her horrible policies. And in particular, her phone app, which nobody can even believe exists. And the people that deal with the phone app are the cartel heads, if you can believe this. They're actually put there, I believe, for the heads of the cartels. And they call it and they tell you exactly where to illegally bring the people that they've, in many cases, abducted. The phone app, I hope the press looks into that. Brutally stabbed this woman to death. Two people in suburban Middletown, New York, are looking at this with a life that will always be shattered. It'll be shattered and can never be the same. The brutality was unbelievable. And despite all of this, Kamala Harris intends to stand before the American people tomorrow and lie. She's going to lie just like she did about her job at McDonald's. Just like she did about the 818,000 jobs that they created that were fake jobs. They didn't exist. It's a fraud. And there's nothing nice about what I'm saying. Our country's in trouble. And we need people that know how to take care of our country and take care of our border. Without borders and without fair elections, we have no country. She wants to pretend that she had a secure border. But all you have to do is look at the numbers. The worst border anywhere, probably anywhere in the world. There's never been a border like this. A third world country would have used sticks and stones to get people out. They wouldn't let millions and millions of people invade. But if that were true, and if she were going to announce tomorrow that she's going to do something about it, why hasn't she done it? And why didn't she do it almost 4 years ago? All of these things she could have done 4 years ago. You will hear Kamala claim that the reason the border is not secure is that Congress has refused to pass her atrocious border bill. It's the worst bill you've ever seen. It would allow people to come in here at levels that would be incredible and would allow them to get citizenship. But it was not a border bill. It was an amnesty bill. And they duped a couple of people that shouldn't have been duped. It would give her the power to put all newly entering illegal aliens on a fast track to citizenship. It would enshrine and expand catch and release, and it would give a permanent feature of federal laws that are absolutely unacceptable. She keeps talking about this law that they tried to put through Congress, but fortunately, Congress was too smart for it. It would have been a disaster. It would have established a minimum number of illegal aliens who must be important, because 2 million people per year at a minimum would have been under this ridiculous bill, would have been allowed into our country. 2 million people. Now, of course, that's peanuts compared to what's coming in now and what's coming in when the damage was really done. Look, the damage was done. They're trying to make it look better now. But the damage was done over the first 3 years. They're trying to do anything to make it look better, because it doesn't poll very well for them. But it polls very well for me. I think I won the election in 2016 because of the border. I fixed the border. I couldn't even talk about the border. My people would say, sir, nobody's listening. You fixed it. Nobody cares in 2020. Then I got millions of more votes in 2020 than I got in 2016. The most votes of any sitting president in history by far. But I couldn't talk about the border because I fixed it. I fixed it. It was great. But now we can talk about the border, because this border, they unfixed it. This border is the worst border. And by the way, 25 times worse and more deadly than the border in 2016. That was considered a good border by compared to this. But it would provide illegal, the bill, alien taxpayer-funded lawyers. Every illegal alien would have a taxpayer-funded lawyer. This is the bill that she said she wants. And funnel millions of dollars of left-wing organizations, people, to come into our country. It would enable human trafficking. And by the way, she also wanted to have transgender operations for illegal migrants that were in detention. Now, think of that. She also wanted, as you know, to defund the police. She wants to defund the police. She was one of the leaders in the defund the police movement. And that lasted for years. And anybody that wants to defund the police for one day should never have the right to be president of the United States. And she was one of the leaders in that movement. But think of that. She wants to give sex change operations to people in detention that came in illegally and are classified as illegal migrants. If they want a sex change operation, she said, that's okay, we'll do that. The only way to secure our border is to fire radical border czar Kamala Harris this November. Look, we talk about the border. She's been just as bad on everything else. We have the worst inflation, I think, in the history of our country. They say 48 years, but that's pretty bad, too. But I think the actual number of years is, I think it brings it out to the worst ever. Kamala Harris endorsed abolishing ICE. She is seen as a down with deportations opportunist, but people don't realize that the people of this country want deportations of those criminals. They want the murderers out. They want the drug dealers out. They want everybody out.
We're
going
to jump out of this for a little bit. We're going
to
keep monitoring it, though, for when Trump takes questions from the press. But as we continue our happy hour brought to you by the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey, we're going to be live again on Friday, October 11th, for our next live show from 3 to 7 p.m. Please come out there and join us for our live show. It's going to be great. I'm very excited to welcome to the show a man who I have tremendous respect for, a guy who is fighting the fight when it comes to school choice like nobody else I know, and that is the one and only Jeff Yass. Jeff, how are you today, sir? It's great. It's an honor to have you on the show.
I'm well, Mike. I'm well, Rich. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. I want to begin by playing a clip of something President Trump said the other day in Pennsylvania regarding a topic very close to your heart, which is school choice. Take a listen.
I will support universal school choice, and every parent will be empowered to send their child to the public, private, religious, or charter school that is right for them.
Now, you've been fighting this fight for a long time. You have the YAS Prize, which awards scholarships to kids to be able to go to the school of their choice. And you've been a big proponent of this idea. And you've said, you know, it's a winning issue for Republicans. So let's talk about it.
Okay. Well, you know, we would describe it as sort of the civil rights issue of our time. You take Philadelphia, for example. If you're a parent of three children, the Philadelphia school system spends $26,000 per kid. That is double when it spent 30, 35 years ago, adjusted for inflation. The results are worse. The test scores are lower, but the graduation rates are higher because they just graduate people. So that's $1 million. 26,000 times 13 years times three is $1 million. So that mother of three living in a low-income area in Philadelphia is receiving $1 million of tax-free money from the taxpayer. The teachers union comes in and swipes that $1 million out of her hands and says, you go to this school whether you like it or not, where maybe at most 10 or 15% of the kids are on grade level. It's crime-ridden, it's violent, and your kid is more likely to go to jail than they are to go to college. The plan that we would like to do, and that certainly that Trump supports, is say, let the money follow the child. Take that $26,000. We're not increasing that money or decreasing it. Give this woman $13,000 to go to a school of her choice. That would cover every charter school. That would cover all the Catholic schools in this city, and it would cover the vast majority of the private schools. And then put the other $13,000 that the taxpayer has saved in a bank account for the kid in kindergarten. When they graduate, they'll have about $200,000. So for no tax increase, for no spending increase or decrease, just cleaning up the waste and the fraud that the teachers union has piled onto this system over the last 30 or 40 years, we can give this child the education of their choice. They can go to any school they want to go to, plus a $200,000 graduation gift. Now, who in their right mind would be against this program? And the answer is the teachers union.
Right. And the teachers union who always backed Democrat politicians. So, for example, when Josh Shapiro was running for governor of Pennsylvania, he said he supported Lifeline scholarships. He gets elected governor of Pennsylvania, and then he completely abandons that position. And we see this from time and time again. Cory Booker used to be a huge proponent of school choice and charter schools until he wanted to run statewide for office. The teachers union controlled these people.
Well, you know who is a funny one? Well, Hillary Clinton was for school choice when she was the first lady of Arkansas. And you're not going to believe this one, but Elizabeth Warren was for school choice. In her book, she wrote how middle-class families are suffering because their schools are so bad. They have to go to a neighborhood they can't really afford to go to a good school. So she suggested a voucher so they don't have to buy an expensive house and they can stay in their neighborhoods. So that's Elizabeth Warren. This is only like, 8 or 12 years ago or something. So just imagine how she gets the call from the unions. They say, you cut this out or else you're gone. And she's never mentioned it again.
Well, she's had a lot of fake identities. So that would just go along with a long list of that. Jeff, Jeff Yass is with me. It's great to have him. When you award the Yass Prize, you do this and you give this to these kids. And I've seen the videos of this on YouTube. And I mean, it is like these kids have won the lottery.
It is I think you're thinking of maybe children's scholarship funds where the mothers cry, the kids cry. The Yass Prize is really started by my wife, and the idea was that there are, if vouchers come, and there's a lot of states that have ESAs, educational savings accounts, or in Pennsylvania we have earned income tax credits, there's money, not enough, but there's some money for kids to go, but there isn't enough supply. So we combed the country looking for entrepreneurs who are basically running small schools or small programs who could scale it up if they got a lot of money. So we gave them money like a venture capitalist would give them money and said, here's a couple $100,000, or the first prize winner is $1 million. Now go expand and go from a couple hundred kids to to a couple of thousand kids and let a thousand flowers bloom. That was the idea of the Yas Prize, to make it like a venture capital fund for budding entrepreneurs in the education field.
I love it. I love it. And were you happy to hear Trump bring this up the other day in Pennsylvania to say we're going to support universal school choice? That I think it's a winning issue. You and I have talked about this before privately. It is the civil rights issue of our time. And I think for a lot of people, if you look at the black vote in this country, because let's face it, there are a lot of black voters and Latino voters. Their kids would benefit from this without question. So I think it's an issue the Republicans should hammer. I think it's a true winner for them.
I couldn't agree more. It is the dividing line. And when you talk about the people who say, what about our democracy? What about our democracy? Well, most in black communities, school choice is favored by 80 to 85% of the people. Latinos, something similar. So why won't they let them have it? Why won't they let it go to a referendum? And why won't they let it go to a vote? Because they know they will lose, and they know they will lose power in what cheered me up so much when Trump said that in Indiana, Pennsylvania on Monday. He said he would close the Department of Education. The Department of Education doles out $80 billion a year to K through 12 schools, and they're, the money is not wisely spent, to say the least. If that department was completely closed and all they did was give out that $80 billion to states that have scholarship programs which cost half as much as what the government schools cost, then for $80 billion you can educate, if it was 10,000 a kid, that's 800,000 that's 800,000 kids that would be freed, and you would be saving the state the other $80 billion, because they're paying twice that price. So the state would save $80 billion. 800,000 kids would get eight million kids would get a scholarship. There would be a marketplace for new schools, because entrepreneurs would know, wow, these kids have $10,000 to spend. I'm going to open up a school in these states. And Trump understands that, and he's trying to do that, and closing the Department of Education and just making it a funder for this entrepreneurship is the way to go. And the dividing line, this should not be a partisan issue, because theoretically the Democrats' constituencies are black people and Latino people, but they are enslaving these people, and Trump wants to liberate them. And to me, it's a defining issue of our time. That's why I spend my time and effort on it. But unfortunately, I got to tell you, it hasn't gained the traction that I hope it would.
Well, it should. And there's another thing, too. We have to talk about the elephant in the room here as well. Democrats oppose school choice for two reasons. Number one, the teachers union controls them. And, like in my state of New Jersey, where I live, the NJEA, they have an entire political action committee that just doles out money to Democrats. And they're a ferocious organization. But the second reason, of course, is Democrats want to be able to indoctrinate our children, from everything on climate change to socialist policies. And they know that as long as they control the monopoly in education, they can control our children's minds. And we have to address that fact, too, because school choice would also solve a lot of these problems. Fights about books in classrooms and fights about curriculum, because it would give parents the ability to say, I don't like what's being taught at this school. I want to move my child to a different school that more aligns with my values.
That's exactly right. And one of the reasons why this has been a fantastic last couple of years for school choice is because of, a blessing that came out of COVID, was people saw what was actually going on.
Right.
Now, when I went to school, the old days, okay, the schools might have been a little incompetent, but there was no indoctrination. Now it's all indoctrination. So we've picked up another ally in the school choice movement to say, look, you teach my kids how to read and write. You're not teaching them. You're not, inflicting your values on my kids. That's the parents' job. So it's picked up a whole new constituencies that it didn't have before COVID.
Yeah, I remember that, Jeff. I remember that just sitting there with my wife, Bridget, and looking at some of the curriculum and thinking, wow, you know, this is an eye opener. And my kids were young and in a great school district. But then we started talking to parents who were really digging into this stuff, and they just couldn't believe it. And that's what really opened up this national conversation, you know. But then there was the other thing around COVID, too, which is how they had the idea of lockdowns and keeping the kids out of the classroom. And that we know was also the teachers union working with the CDC to orchestrate that. And that was another incredibly frustrating thing for parents.
Well, just think of the damage that did. The private schools, the Catholic schools were by and less open. The government schools were closed, and these kids are going to suffer for the rest of their lives. I think what we need to get out there is that these undeserved parents need to think twice about who they vote for. They generally tend to vote Democratic. I'm asking these people, please look at what they are doing to you. There is a program out there that would give you the school of your choice and $200,000 when you graduate, and they're saying no. Are they really your friends? Are they really caring about your well-being? Obviously not. They only care about power, and they only want to be funded by the teachers union. This is what we're trying to spark. When these people vote their interests, not the teachers union's interests, then we will have a revolution in this country.
Yeah, and as you think about it, too, I mean, if Republicans keep beating this message and Trump keeps beating this message and he undercuts the black vote that would go to Harris and he gets more of that, he doesn't have to win it, but he just digs into that number. That makes a huge, huge difference right there. So then let me ask Jeff Yass
by
to
the
put
way,
on his.
On that, DeSantis beat Gilliam in Florida, he got 18% of the black women vote, which is like an astonishing number because he ran so strong on school choice. So like you said, he certainly didn't come anywhere close to a majority. He got 18%, but he normally gets 8%. And that was the difference between winning and losing.
All right. So let me ask you to put on your poker player hat, because you love the games of chance. So I want to ask you to give me some election betting odds. Can we talk about that?
Yes, we can.
All right. How do things look right now? I hear this all the time, and every time I go on Fox News, it's always the same thing about Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania. Whoever wins Pennsylvania wins the White House. Do you agree with that?
I do, and I'm not just saying it because I live in Pennsylvania. I'm not trying to brag because I'm a Pennsylvanian. But the election is exactly tied right now. It's incredible. It's a 50-50 shot. Pennsylvania is exactly tied. It's a 50-50 shot. If you told me who's going to win Pennsylvania, I could, with about 85-90% certainty, tell you who's going to win the election. So Pennsylvania, is more likely than not to determine who's going to win. And that's why 15% of Pennsylvania is Latino. They would love to go to Catholic schools if they can afford it, which they can't. And the ones who are already in Catholic schools are paying, would love not to be double taxed, pay a tax for a government school they don't use, and then have to pay $10,000 or whatever it is for a Catholic school. So we're hoping that Trump and McCormick go out there and explain to the people of Pennsylvania that if they get elected, they will do whatever they can to get these policies through. You will get a great education, and you will get a $200,000 when you graduate. If they can convince just a tiny fraction of Pennsylvanians that that's the case, it's enough to tip an election, enough to have the Republicans win Pennsylvania, and that would be enough to win the entire election.
I agree with you 100%, 100%, exactly what you just said, because, again, we're talking about margins that are so thin. 10,000 votes here, 10,000 votes there. It all makes such a difference when you're talking about a state that is statistically tied. And so between get out the vote efforts and winning over different demographic groups on different issues, this plays into family values, too. I'll give you something else, too. I think it also matters in rural areas where you have schools that are not that great and parents that know that they would love to be able to send their kids to private schools, but they're dealing with economies in, say, like Western Pennsylvania, for example, where they've been decimated by the war on energy. And so they don't have the ability and the means to be able to send their kids to better schools.
In Bradford, Pennsylvania, where Fetterman's from, the amount of school spending is up to $35,000 per kid.
What?
So many kids. Yes. So many kids have left the system, but the schools are so horrible. They make Philadelphia schools look okay, that because of the program that the unions got in there called Held Harmless, when a kid leaves and he goes, you know, he moves or he goes to another school or he's homeschooled, the money stays behind. It's called Held Harmless. So right now, if you're a kid and you go to school in Bradford, Pennsylvania, the government is going to be spending $35,000 per person on these kids. It's absolutely outrageous. If they get, you know, Bradford's one of the poorest cities in the country. If they gave these kids half the $35,000 and a voucher, they would not be poor anymore. Poverty in Bradford, Pennsylvania, same thing as Philadelphia, would be gone overnight if this program was put in.
This was a joy to have you on the show. Will you please come back?
I'm ready. Thank you, Rich. I really appreciate it.
No, Jeff, thank you. Jeff, yes, thanks for everything you're doing, and we will talk again, my friend. Keep up the great fight. You are a true fighter and a patriot, and we are very, very lucky to have you on our side, so thank you.
Okay. My pleasure. Thank you.
It's the 5 o'clock happy hour on the Rich Zioli Show. Brought to you by the Oceanfront Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. A premier full-service resort and conference center. GrandHotelCapeMay.com.
And I want to remind you, we're going to be there live October 11th. So here's what we're going to do, by the way. Trump's taking questions. We've been rolling on it. So we're going to play the questions from Trump and the reporters. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back. Trump and the questions from the reporters. So you'll get to hear that. We got RNC Chairman Michael Whatley at 6 o'clock. So you're not going to miss a thing. I always promise you that. You'll never miss a thing. I do want to tell you that Dr. Mike Veneria is the guy to go see for your smile. He's got two locations to serve you. And for 12 consecutive years, Dr. Mike has been out there giving people the smiles of their dreams. And he can give you an incredible smile, too, just like he did for my wife, Bridget. She needed veneers replaced, and he replaced the veneers with beautiful caps. And my wife's smile has never looked better. She had a beautiful smile before. Just to say that for the record. But it's absolutely beautiful now. And he's our entire family dentist. Patrick just went to see him for an appointment the other day. So what are you waiting for? It's time to get that smile you deserve. Christmas is coming. The holidays are coming. All the pictures. If you need complicated dental work, if you need a dental implant, go see Dr. Mike Veneria today. You get a free dental implant consultation, and you will be on your way to having the most beautiful smile you could ever imagine. VeneriaDental.com. V-A-N-A-R-I-A. VeneriaDental.com. And he's a great guy, great music playing in the office, great staff. And for 12 years, his colleagues, his peers have recognized him as a master of dental implants, referring their patients to him for complicated dental work. That's my dentist. That's my friend, Dr. Mike Veneria, VeneriaDental.com.
The Rich Zioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
President Trump just wrapped up taking questions, but we're going to let you hear the questions because we had that great interview, which I thought was really important for you to hear. So we're going to play that for you, at least a good portion of it for you. As we continue along here, I want to remind you, we're live at the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey on October 11th. Yes, October 11th, Friday, October 11th at the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. And I'm excited to be there for that. It's going to be a great show, a lot of fun, and we'll have a wonderful time together. So please make sure you join us for that. Chairman Michael Whatley is going to join us at 6 p.m. tonight. All right. The chairman of the RNC will join us, and I'm looking forward to having him have a conversation with us. I also want to mention, too, you know, there was a lot on that assassination task force report today. But really, one of the key things that I think was a moment where Representative Mike Waltz, I'm not going to play the audio just right now, but hopefully later, talked about how Iran has been ongoing assassination plots on President Trump. Anyway, here's the question and answer period that we missed from Trump's press conference today, just wrapped up a few moments ago. Let's jump in.
I don't know. I don't know the mayor well, but he's been fairly generous to me in his statements for a while. I thought you had the worst mayor ever that we had prior to him. I will say this. I watched about a year ago when he talked about how the illegal migrants are hurting our city and the federal government should pay us and we shouldn't have to take them. And I said, you know what? He'll be indicted within a year. And I was exactly right. because that's what we have. We have people that use the Justice Department and the FBI at levels that have never been seen before. So I wish him luck. I don't know anything about what he did, but I told a lot of group, a lot of people right over there, that group was saying, you know, sir, you were right about that. When they mentioned that, I said, they came in and he was pretty strong about it. He said, this is really unfair to make us carry this burden. We shouldn't be doing this. This is New York City. I mean, your parks are loaded up. I just passed recently Madison Avenue, the Roosevelt Hotel. It's like nobody would recognize it. That's Midtown. But he came out very strongly against it. He was right, by the way, because it's ruining our country. He was honest. And I said, he will be indicted within a year. And that's what happened. And I noticed the indictment's very old. It goes back a long time. Well, I had the same thing. They went way before the statute of limitations. So I wish him well, but I said that he will be indicted because he did that. You take a look. That's what they
do. I said the same thing.
These are dirty players. These are bad people.
I said the exact same thing.
And they do anything necessary. These are bad people. And we need an honest Justice Department. We need an honest FBI. And we need it fast. Yeah.
Keir Starmer, the UK Premier.
Yes, he's coming tonight.
What do you think of him? Some of his colleagues in government are quite critical of you.
Well, I'm going to see him in about an hour, so I have to be nice, right?
Yeah.
But I actually think he's very nice. I think he ran a great race. He did very well. It's very early, but he's popular, and I'll be seeing him, and I'll send you regards. Who are you with? Who are you with?
I'm with GB News in the UK.
Okay, good.
Would you rather Nigel Farage had a bigger role?
Well, I think Nigel is great. I mean, I've known him for a long time. He had a great election, too. He picked up a lot of seats, more seats than he was allowed to have, actually. They acknowledge that he won, but for some reason you have a very strange system over there. You might win him, but you don't get him. Nigel is a fantastic person.
Mr. President.
President Zelensky said that you do not understand what it takes to win this war.
Oh, then I should immediately cancel my appointment. No. He knows. He knows I understand. Look, I hate to see the carnage. If I were president, it never would have happened. Russia would have never attacked Ukraine. Never, ever. And by the way, President Xi would have never even thought about Taiwan, which he's thinking about very seriously now, flying planes over it every single day. But President Putin would have never attacked. When I look at the horror show that's gone on, and the level of death is far greater than what is being reported. When you look at those cities, they're all knocked down, those beautiful, gorgeous golden domes. They're shattered and lying on their side, never to be replaced again. You can't ever replace that. 2,000 years old. When you look at the heritage of that really very vibrant country in so many different ways, see how it's been so broken, the people, so many people dead, where they have to use old soldiers, old men and young boys because they're running out of soldiers. It's a very terrible thing. And then you see that the United States is paying for most of it and Europe is not chipping in. And all you have to do with Europe is the same thing I did with NATO. Say you have to pay. And if you say you have to pay, they will. It's very unfair to the United States. But I look forward to seeing him tomorrow. We'll see. I do believe I disagree with him. Well, he doesn't know me, but I disagree. But I will say this. I believe I will be able to make a deal between President Putin and President Zelensky quite quickly.
What does that look like?
I don't want to tell you what that looks like.
The vice president suggested today that your strategy with Ukraine amounts to surrender to Russia. How do you respond to that?
No, I don't think so. And it's not a surrender. What my strategy is to save lives, I want to save lives. Millions of people are dead. Millions more than they even think about. And it's not my fight, but it is a fight to save humanity.
That is a terrible.
Let me explain. That is a terrible war that would have never happened, and it didn't happen. I even have Democrats. I watched them on Deface the Nation and some of the shows this weekend, and they said, "Well, we agree that it wouldn't have happened if Trump were president." And I was very generous of them, but it would have never happened. That's what bothers me even more. There was no reason for that war to happen, but it did happen, and millions of people are dead, including soldiers from both sides. It's so sad to see it. And I'll meet with President Zelensky and we'll see what happens. But I believe I can work that out.
Would you encourage?
It would have been, I will say this, it would have been a lot easier to work out prior to the start. And Putin never, ever even thought about going in. And it was the apple of his eye. I knew him very well, had a very good relationship, despite the Russia, Russia, Russia hoax. It was a total hoax. But we had a very good relationship. Fortunately, otherwise we could have ended up in war over there. This is very dangerous. You know, when you make up stories like that, it's very dangerous. The laptop from hell was very dangerous. But Putin told me often, it's the apple of his eye. But I said, Vladimir, don't even think about doing it. He would have never done it. And then, of course, through stupid oil policies and energy policies where oil get up to almost $100 a barrel, Putin said, wow, I have a lot more money than I thought I had. And he prosecuted the war. But even if it went up, and it wouldn't have gone up like that, that's what caused inflation, that and stupid spending for the Green New Deal, which was a Green New scam, turned out. Do you notice that they don't ever mention anything about environment anymore? What happened to the environment? They don't mention it. They don't mention that the ocean's going to rise a quarter of an inch over the next 500 years. They don't mention it anymore. It's incredible. I will say this, though. What they should start mentioning is nuclear warming. Because we're in grave danger, the world is in grave danger, and you better get smart people. You know, during my term, I never mentioned the word nuclear. But that's the warming that you're going to have to be very careful with. And we're very close to World War III. Whether it's the Middle East or that, October 7th would have never happened. Iran had no money. I guess that's probably why you hear the stories about Iran. Only a consequential president would have this happen. Only a consequential president, but Iran would have made a deal with us. It would have been a great deal for them. The only thing is they cannot have nuclear weapons, and we would have had it because Iran had no money during my administration. They were broke, and they would have made a deal, and they would have been happy, and they would have had an unbelievable civilization. But it didn't work out that way because of a thing that was very sad to watch. That was the election. A very sad thing to watch.
Would you still make a deal with them now after everything that's happened? If you were reelected?
Make a deal with who?
Make a deal with who? Would you try to make a deal with Iran of some kind if you were reelected?
Sure, I would do that. You know, I believe in getting, it doesn't matter. I have a great memory, but it's a memory that wants to serve the people. We have to make a deal because the consequences are impossible. We have to make a deal. And they would have had a deal. I would have said we would have had the results of the election been correct. We would have had a deal within 1 week after the election. I was prepared to get it done within 1 week after the election. They could have done that, too, but they had no idea how to go about it. They could have done it because I gave them a country that wanted to make a deal. They had to. There was no money to Hamas. There was no money to Hezbollah. Because Iran didn't have the money. Now Iran has $300 billion. They made it all in the last 3.5 years. The sanctions came off. They made it all in the last 3.5 years. Plus, they essentially have Iraq as a subsidiary, and Iraq has $300 billion. So Iran is a very rich country. They have $600 to $650 billion, including Iraq. Iraq doesn't like it when I say that, but that's true. They're really a subsidiary because foolishly Bush wiped out. You had two powerful forces. One of those forces wiped out. And now the other force, after 1,000 years, walks in and just essentially takes it over. So it's very sad to watch. But Iran now is a big force because they're very rich. Iran was not rich at all. Iran didn't have the money to take care of the various organizations of terror. Okay.
You've been told today the UN General Assembly came together to call for an immediate ceasefire. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is speaking at the UN tomorrow. He has refused to do that. What would you do differently to prevent the Middle East?
Well, you have to have that ended one way or the other. The world isn't going to take it. You have to have that ended. And I would think that we're getting close to a point where maybe it can end pretty soon. But you're going to have to end. That's unacceptable. The whole thing over there is unacceptable. That's another one. October 7th would have never happened. Would have never happened. Ukraine and Russia would have never happened. Think of it. Would have never happened. Inflation would have never happened. Think of the world. The Afghanistan pullout in that way. We would have pulled out, but we would have pulled out with dignity and strength. I'm the one that got it down to that number. But I would have kept Bagram.
All right, so that was the end of the press conference right there, and there you go. All right, so a couple other things I wanted to mention to you as well, audio-wise, and it's important. It's from the Presidential Assassination Task Force Committee hearing today, and that's the big story of the hour brought to you by our buddy Dr. Mike Vanaria, VanariaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile, V-A-N-A-R-I-A, VanariaDental.com. So, Congressman Mike Kelly, I started to play this before, but it's worth playing. He can't understand why no one said, keep the president inside until we clear this up. Now, this is it's a little bit of a longer cut. It's like a minute and a half, but it's really important to hear. I think it sums up everything we've been asking about this. And he's the chairman of the committee. He'll be on the show with us next week. But it really kind of sums up everything for me in terms of you've had all this about crooks and this time period and the sniper on the roof and this cluster F of this guy calling the 800 number to, 1-800 drone help, and the miscommunication between the local cops who can't get to the Secret Service in terms because the Secret Service is not on the radio frequencies, and then the Secret Service trying to blame the local cops. And here's the key point here that I think the chairman makes. Cut 14.
You know, I have a problem going back to the actual sighting of Mr. Crooks more than once and way, way before 11 minutes after 6. I think that one of the things is the panel has heard from different people at different times is of the thousands of people that were on the grounds that day, there is repeatedly one person that keeps standing out in the back and forth, all the different communication. And it is, in fact, Thomas Crooks that they're talking about. So we knew there was somebody that was very suspicious. We also knew there was somebody that we weren't able to actually come in contact with, and we kept losing contact with him. We saw him with a rangefinder. We saw him doing things that were not probably in line with what people go to a rally for. And I think that I'm constantly going to be wondering at what point did somebody say, we're not sure the area is secure and safe? There's nothing. Understanding before that. The way you all responded, I think, was incredible. I want to thank you for that, but I still can't understand. Of all the different people that were on the grounds that day, thousands of people, there's only one consistent person that they identify, and it is ultimately the shooter. So I don't believe the grounds were safe and secure that day. I'm just trying to understand is what it was or what it would have taken for somebody to say, keep Mr. Trump inside until we clear this up. Well, Commander Lenz, because you and I have had not just minutes but hours together in a couple of days, we'll be going a deep, deep dive to what happened. Do you feel that the Secret Service adequately prepared you and your men for July 13th?
I believe I can answer the tasks that they had given us, which would be to provide two counter-assault teams, two sniper teams, and a quick reaction force. We were certainly prepared for the missions that they had given us. There were additional things, obviously, that probably needed covered, but they never asked us to do that. They never tasked us with that. So given what they specifically asked us to do, we were certainly prepared to do that.
That was Sergeant Edward Lenz of the Adams Township Police Department. And Kelly also points out that Crooks was on the roof for over 3 minutes before the shots were fired. And I played that clip for you before, but that's also amazing that, for 3 minutes he's up there and they don't, and then he takes the shots and then they take the shots. And that's the other part too about this. And Senator Ron Johnson made a really important point that I don't think enough people are really saying, which is that the local police believe that they shot Crooks, but we don't actually know because his body has been cremated. He said that last night on Jesse Waters' show. And he goes into detail about that, and I'll try to play that for you in the next hour if I can, because we have a lot to get to. This show today has been obviously a little bit hijacked by Trump's press conference, but hey, listen, we got 40 something days to the election, so you know that's how we roll. It's what we did in 2016. It's what we did in 2020. It's how we do it. It's fine. It's all good. And obviously, I'm sure you appreciate hearing it. Certainly, I think you do. But let's do this. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. The chairman of the RNC, Michael Whatley, will be my guest. Our fourth and final hour. Don't go away.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.